Welcome to Reading the Classics on KRBD Ketchikan. I'm Pat Tully of the Ketchikan Public Library. This evening I'm going to read a selection of letters between John Adams and his wife Abigail, written in the summer of 1774. At this time, John was 38 years old, Abigail was 29, and they had four children living. Abigail, or Nabby, who was then 9 years old, John Quincy, or Johnny, who was 7, Charles, or Charlie, who was 4, and Thomas, who was just turning 2. The American colonies were in turmoil in the summer of 1774. In December of the previous year, a group of Bostonians threw a shipment of British tea into Boston Harbor to protest against a tax on tea and other goods. In response to this and other protests, the British Parliament passed several repressive measures known in the colonies as the Intolerable Acts. The colonies responded by calling the First Continental Congress in September 1774. John Adams, with his cousin Samuel Adams and Thomas Cushing, were the Massachusetts delegates to the Congress and left for Philadelphia on August 10th of that year. The first letter is to John from Abigail. Braintree, Massachusetts, 19th of August, 1774. The great distance between us makes the time appear very long to me. It seems already a month since you left me. The great anxiety I feel for my country, for you, and for our family renders the day tedious and the night unpleasant. The rocks and quicksands appear upon every side. What course you can or will take is all wrapped in the bosom of futurity. Uncertainty and expectation leave the mind great scope. Did ever any kingdom or state regain its liberty when once it was invaded without bloodshed? I cannot think of it without horror. Yet we are told that all the misfortunes of Sparta were occasioned by their too great solicitude for present tranquility. And from an excessive love of peace, they neglected the means of making it sure and lasting. They ought to have reflected, says Polybius, that as there is nothing more desirable or advantageous than peace when founded in justice and honor, so there is nothing more shameful and at the same time more pernicious when attained by bad measures and purchased at the price of liberty. I have received the most charming letter from our friend Mrs. Warren. She desires me to tell you that her best wishes attend you through your journey, both as a friend and a patriot, and hopes you will have no uncommon difficulties to surmount or hostile movements to impede you. But if the Locrians should interrupt you, she hopes that you will beware that no future annals may say you chose an ambitious Philip for your leader, who subverted the noble order of American Amphiticons and built up a monarchy on the ruin of the happy institution. I have taken a very great fondness for reading Rollin's Ancient History since you left me. I am determined to go through with it, if possible, in these my days of solitude. I find great pleasure and entertainment from it, and have persuaded Johnny to read me a page or two every day, and hope he will, from this desire to oblige me, entertain a fondness for it. We have had a charming rain, which lasted 12 hours and has greatly revived the dying fruits of the earth. I want much to hear from you. I long impatiently to have you upon the stage of action. The 1st of September, or the month of September, perhaps, may be of as much importance to Great Britain as the Ides of March were to Caesar. I wish you every public as well as private blessing, and that wisdom which is profitable both for instruction and edification to conduct you in this difficult day. The little flock remember Papa, and kindly wish to see him. So does your most affectionate, Abigail Adams. From John to Abigail, Princeton, New Jersey, 28th of August, 1774. I received your kind letter at New York, and it is not easy for you to imagine the pleasure it has given me. I have not found a single opportunity to write since I left Boston, excepting by the post, and I don't choose to write by that conveyance, for fear of foul play. But as we are now within 42 miles of Philadelphia, I hope there to find some private hand by which I can convey this. The particulars of our journey I must reserve to be communicated after my return. It would take a volume to describe the whole. It has been, upon the whole, an agreeable jaunt. We have had opportunities to see the world and to form acquaintances with the most eminent and famous men in the several colonies we have passed through. We have been treated with unbounded civility, complacence, and respect. We yesterday visited Nassau Hall College and were politely treated by the scholars, tutors, professors, and president, whom we are this day to hear preach. Tomorrow we reach the theater of action. God Almighty grant us wisdom and virtue sufficient for the high trust that is devolved upon us. The spirit of the people, wherever we have been, seems to be very favorable. They universally consider our cause as their own and express the firmest resolution to abide by the determination of the Congress. I am anxious for our perplexed, distressed province, hope they will be directed into the right path. Let me entreat you, my dear, to make yourself as easy and quiet as possible. Resignation to the will of heaven is our only resource in such dangerous times. Prudence and caution should be our guides. I have the strongest hopes that we shall yet see a clearer sky and better times. Remember my tender love to little Abby. Tell her she must write me a letter and enclose it in the next you send. I am charmed with your amusement with our little Johnny. Tell him I am glad to hear that he is so good a boy as to read to his mama for her entertainment and to keep himself out of the company of rude children. Tell him I hope to hear a good account of his accidents and nomenclature when I return. Remember me to all inquiring friends, particularly to Uncle Quincy, your papa and family, and Dr. Tufts and family. Mr. Thatcher, I hope, is a good companion in your solitude. Tell him if he devotes his soul and body to his books, I hope, notwithstanding the darkness of these days, he will not find them unprofitable sacrifices in future. I have received 3 very obliging letters from Tudor, Trumbull, and Hill. They have cheered us in our wanderings and done us much service. Your account of the rain refreshed me. I hope our husbandry is prudently and industriously managed. Frugality must be our support. Our expenses in this journey will be very great. Our only recompense will be the consolatory reflection that we toil, spend our time, and encounter dangers for the public good. Happy indeed if we do any good. The education of our children is never out of my mind. Train them to virtue. Habituate them to industry, activity, and spirit. Make them consider every vice as shameful and unmanly. Fire them with ambition to be useful. Make them disdain to be destitute of any useful or ornamental knowledge or accomplishment. Fix their ambition upon great and solid objects, and their contempt upon little, frivolous, and useless ones. It is time, my dear, for you to begin to teach them French. Every decency, grace, and honesty should be inculcated upon them. I have kept a few minutes by way of journal, which shall be your entertainment when I come home. But we have had so many persons and so various characters to converse with and so many objects to view that I have not been able to be so particular as I could wish. I am, with the tenderest affection and concern, your wandering John Adams. From Abigail to John, Braintree, September 2nd, 1774. I am very impatient to receive a letter from you. You indulged me so much in that way in your last absence that I now think I have a right to hear as often from you as you have leisure and opportunity to write. I hear that Mr. Adams wrote to his son and the speaker to his lady, but perhaps you did not know of the opportunity. Suppose you have before this time received 2 letters from me and will write me by the same conveyance. I judge you reached Philadelphia last Saturday night. I cannot but felicitate you on your absence a little while from this scene of perturbation, anxiety, and distress. I own I feel not a little agitated with the accounts I have this day received from town. great commotions have arisen in consequence of the discovery of a traitorous plot of Colonel Brattle's. His advice to Gage to break every commissioned officer and to seize the province and town's stock of powder. This has so enraged and exasperated the people that there is great apprehension of an immediate rupture. They have been all in flames since the newfangled councillors have taken their oaths. The importance with which they consider the meeting of the Congress and the result thereof to the community withholds the arm of vengeance already lifted, but which would most certainly fall with accumulated wrath upon Brattle, were it possible to come at him. But no sooner did he discover that his treachery had taken air than he fled not only to Boston, but into the camp for safety. You will, by Mr. Tudor, no doubt have a much more accurate account than I am able to give you. But one thing I can inform you of, which perhaps you have not heard, viz., Mr. Vinton, our sheriff, it seems, received one of those 20 warrants which were issued by Mr. Goldthwaite and Price, and which has cost them such bitter repentance and humble acknowledgments, and which has revealed the great secret of their attachment to the liberties of their country and their veneration and regard for the goodwill of their countrymen. See their address to Hutchinson and Gage. This warrant, which was for Stottingham, Vinton carried and delivered to a constable there, but before he had got 6 miles, he was overtaken by 60 men on horseback, who surrounded him and told him that unless he returned with them and demanded back that warrant and committed it to the flames before their faces, he must take the consequences of a refusal, and he, not thinking it best to endure their vengeance, returned with them, made his demand of the warrant, and consumed it, upon which they dispersed and left him to his own reflections. Since the news of the Quebec Bill had arrived, all the church people here have hung their heads and will not converse upon politics, though ever so much provoked by the opposite party. Before that, parties run very high, and very hard words, and threats of blows upon both sides were given out. They have had their town meeting here, and which was full as usual, chose their committee for the county meeting, and did business without once regarding or fearing for the consequences. I should be glad to know how you found the people as you traveled from town to town. I hear you met with great hospitality and kindness in Connecticut. Pray let me know how your health is, and whether you have not had exceeding hot weather. The drought here has been severe. My poor cows will certainly prefer a petition to you, setting forth their grievances and informing you that they have been deprived of their ancient privileges, whereby they are become great sufferers, and desiring that they may be restored to them, more especially as their living by reason of the drought is all taken away from them, and their property which they hold elsewhere is all decaying. They humbly pray that you would consider them, lest hunger should break through the stone walls. Our little flock are well, and present their duty to their papa. My mother is in a very low state, occasioned by a return of her old complaints. Nabby has enclosed a letter to you. Would be glad I would excuse the writing, because of a sore thumb which she has. The tenderest regard evermore awaits you from your most affectionate, Abigail Adams. From John to Abigail, Philadelphia, 8th of September, 1774. When or where this letter will find you, I know not, and what scenes of distress and terror I cannot foresee. We have received a confused account from Boston of a dreadful catastrophe. The particulars we have not heard. We are waiting with the utmost anxiety and impatience for further intelligence. The effect of the news we have, both upon the Congress and the inhabitants of this city, was very great, great indeed. Every gentleman seems to consider the bombardment of Boston as the bombardment of the capital of his own province. Our deliberations are grave and serious indeed. It is a great affliction to me that I cannot write to you oftener than I do. But there are so many hindrances that I cannot. It would fill volumes to give you an idea of the scenes I behold and the characters I converse with. We have so much business, so much ceremony, so much company, so many visits to receive and return, that I have not time to write, and the times are such as to make it imprudent to write freely. We cannot depart from this place until the business of Congress is completed, and it is the general disposition to proceed slowly. When I shall be at home, I can't say. If there's distress and danger in Boston, pray invite our friends, as many as possible, to take an asylum with you, Mrs. Cushing and Mrs. Adams, if you can. There is in the Congress a collection of the greatest men upon this continent in point of abilities, virtues, and fortunes. The magnanimity and public spirit which I see here make me blush for the sordid, venal herd which I have seen in my own province. The addressers and the new counselors are held in universal contempt and abhorrence from one end of the continent to the other. Be not under any concern for me. There is little danger from anything we shall do at the Congress. There is such a spirit through the colonies, and the members of the Congress are such characters, that no danger can happen to us which will not involve the whole continent in universal desolation. And in that case, who would wish to live? Adieu. From John to Abigail, Philadelphia, 14th of September, 1774. I have written but once to you since I left you. This is to be imputed to a variety of causes, which I cannot explain for want of time. It would fill volumes to give you an exact idea of the whole tour. My time is totally filled from the moment I get out of bed until I return to it. Visits, ceremonies, company, business, newspapers, pamphlets, etc., etc., etc. The Congress will, to all present appearance, be well united in such measures as, I hope, will give satisfaction to the friends of our country. A Tory here is the most despicable animal in the creation. Spiders, toads, snakes are their only proper emblems. The Massachusetts counselors and addressers are held in curious esteem here, as you will see. The spirit, the firmness, the prudence of our province are vastly applauded, and we are universally acknowledged the saviors and defenders of American liberty. The designs and plans of the Congress must not be communicated until completed, and we shall move with great deliberation. When I shall come home, I know not. But at present I do not expect to take my leave of this city these 4 weeks. My compliments, love, service, where they are due. My babes are never out of my mind, nor absent from my heart. Adieu. From Abigail to John, Braintree, 14th of September, 1774. 5 weeks have passed, and not one line have I received. I would rather give a dollar for a letter by the post, though the consequence should be that I ate but one meal a day these 3 weeks to come. Everyone I see is inquiring after you. When did I hear? All my intelligence is collected from the newspaper, and I can only reply that I saw by that you arrived such a day. I know your fondness for writing, and your inclination to let me hear from you by the first safe conveyance, which makes me suspect that some letter or other has miscarried. But I hope, now that you have arrived at Philadelphia, that you will find means to convey me some intelligence. We are all well here. I think I enjoyed better health than I have done these 2 years. I have not been to town since I parted with you there. The governor is making all kinds of warlike preparations, such as mounting cannon upon Beacon Hill, digging entrenchments upon the Neck, placing cannon there, and camping a regiment there, throwing up breastworks, etc. The people are much alarmed, and the selectmen have waited upon him in consequence of it. The county congress have also sent a committee, all which proceedings you will have a more particular account of than I am able to give you from the public papers. But as to the movements of this town, perhaps you may not hear them from any other person. In consequence of the powder being taken from Charlestown, a general alarm spread through many towns and was caught pretty soon here. The report took here on Friday, and on Sunday a soldier was seen lurking about the common, supposed to be a spy, but most likely a deserter. However, intelligence of it was communicated to other parishes, and about 8 o'clock Sunday evening there passed by here about 200 men, preceded by a horse cart, and marched down to the powder house, from whence they took the powder, and carried it to some other parish, and there secreted it. I opened the window upon their return. They passed without any noise, not a word among them, until they came up against this house, when some of them, perceiving me, asked me if I wanted any powder. I replied, no, since it was in so good hands. The reason they gave for taking it was that we had so many Tories here, they dared not trust us with it. They had taken Minton in their train, and upon their return they stopped between Cleverly's and Edder's, and called upon him to deliver two warrants. Upon his producing them, they put it to the vote whether they should burn them, and passed it in the affirmative. They then made a circle and burnt them. They then called a vote whether they should huzza, but it being Sunday evening, it passed in the negative. They called upon Vinton to swear that he would never be instrumental in carrying into execution any of these new acts. They were not satisfied with his answers. However, they let him rest. A few days afterwards, upon his making some foolish speeches, they assembled to the amount of 200 or 300 and swore vengeance upon him unless he took a solemn oath. Accordingly, they chose a committee and sent it with him to Major Miller's to see that he complied, and they waited his return, which proving satisfactory, they dispersed. This town appears as high as you can well imagine, and, if necessary, would soon be in arms. Not a Tory but hides his head. The church parson thought they were coming after him and ran up garret. They say another jumped out of his window and hid amongst the corn, while a third crept under his board fence and told his beads. Abigail to John, 16th of September, 1774. I dined today at Colonel Quincy's. They were so kind as to send me and Abby and Betsy an invitation to spend the day with them, and as I had not been to see them since I removed to Braintree, I accepted the invitation. After I got there came Mr. Samuel Quincy's wife and Mr. Sumner, Mr. Josiah and wife. A little clashing of parties, you may be sure. Mr. Sam's wife said she thought it high time for her husband to turn about. He had not done half so cleverly since he left her advice. Said they both greatly admired the most excellent speech of the Bishop of St. Asaph, which I suppose you have seen. It meets, and most certainly merits, the greatest encomiums. Upon my return at night, Mr. Thaxter met me at the door with your letter, dated at Princeton, New Jersey. It really gave me such a flow of spirits that I was not composed enough to sleep until 1 o'clock. You make no mention of one I wrote you previous to that you received by Mr. Breck and sent by Mr. Cunningham. I am rejoiced to hear that you are well. I want to know many more particulars than you write me, and hope soon to hear from you again. I dare not trust myself with the thought of how long you may perhaps be absent. I only count the weeks already passed, and they amount to 5. I am not so lonely as I should have been without my 2 neighbors. We make a table full at meal times. All the rest of their time they spend in the office. Never were 2 persons who gave a family less trouble than they do. It is at last determined that Mr. Rice keep the school here. Indeed, he has kept ever since he has been here, but not with any expectation that he should be continued. But the people, finding no small difference between him and his predecessor, chose that he should be continued. I have not sent Johnny. He goes very steadily to Mr. Thaxter, and who I believe takes very good care of him, and as they seem to have a liking to each other, I believe it will be best to continue him with him. However, when you return, we can consult what will be best. I am certain that if he does not get so much good, he gets less harm, and I have always thought it of great importance that children should, in the early part of life, be unaccustomed to such examples as would tend to corrupt the purity of their words and actions, that they may chill with horror at the sound of an oath, and blush with indignation at an obscene expression. These first principles, which grow with their growth, and strengthen with their strength, neither time nor custom can totally eradicate. You will perhaps be tired. No, let it serve by way of relaxation from the more important concerns of the day, and be such an amusement as your little hermitage used to afford you here. You have before you, to express myself in the words of the bishop, the greatest national concerns that ever came before any people, And if the prayers and petitions ascend unto heaven, which are daily offered for you, wisdom will flow down as a stream, and righteousness as the mighty waters, and your deliberations will make glad the cities of our God. I am very sorry I did not know of Mr. Carey's going. It would have been so good an opportunity to have sent this, as I lament the loss of. You have heard, no doubt, of the people's preventing the court from sitting in various counties. And last week, in Taunton, Angier urged the court's opening and calling out the actions, but could not effect it. I saw a letter from Miss Eunice, wherein she gives an account of it, and says there were 2,000 men assembled round the courthouse, and, by a committee of 9, presented a petition requesting that they would not sit, and with the utmost order waited 2 hours for their answer, when they dispersed. You will burn all these letters, lest they should fall from your pocket, and thus expose your most affectionate friend, Abigail Adams. From John to Abigail, Philadelphia, 18th of September, 1774. In your last, you inquire tenderly after my health, and how we found the people of our journey, and how we were treated. I have enjoyed as good health as usual, and much more than I know how to account for, when I consider the extreme heat of the weather and the incessant feasting I have endured ever since I left Boston. The people in Connecticut, New York, and the Jerseys, and Philadelphia, we have found extremely well principled and very well inclined, although some persons in New York and Philadelphia wanted a little animation. Their zeal, however, has increased wonderfully since we began our journey. When the horrid news was brought here of the bombardment of Boston, which made us completely miserable for 2 days, we saw proofs both of the sympathy and the resolution of the continent. War, war, war was the cry, and it was pronounced in a tone which would have done honor to the oratory of a Briton or a Roman. If it had proved true, you would have heard the thunder of an American Congress. I have not time nor language to express the hospitality and civility, the studied and expensive respect with which we have been treated in every step of our progress. If Camden, Chatham, Richmond, and St. Asaph had traveled through the country, they could not have been entertained with greater demonstrations of respect than Cushing, Payne, and the Brace of Adamses have been. The particulars will amuse you when we return. I confess the kindness, the affection, the applause which have been given to me, and especially to our province, have many a time filled my bosom and streamed from my eyes. My best respects to Colonel Warren and his lady when you write to them. I wish to write to them. Adieu. From John to Abigail, 18th of September, 1774. I received your very agreeable letter by Mr. Marston, and have received 2 others, which gave me much pleasure. I have wrote several letters, but whether they have reached you, I know not. There is so much rascality in the management of letters now come in fashion, that I am determined to write nothing of consequence, not even to the friend of my bosom, but by conveyances which I can be sure of. The proceedings of the Congress are all a profound secret as yet, except 2 votes which were passed yesterday, in order to be printed. You will see them from every quarter. These votes were passed in full Congress with perfect unanimity. The esteem, the affection, the admiration for the people of Boston and the Massachusetts, which were expressed yesterday, and the fixed determination that they should be supported, were enough to melt a heart of stone. I saw the tears gush into the eyes of the old, grave Pacific Quakers of Pennsylvania. You cannot conceive, my dear, the hurry of business, visits, ceremonies which we are obliged to go through. We have a delicate course to steer between too much activity and too much insensibility in our critical, interested situation. I flatter myself, however, that we shall conduct ourselves in such a manner as to merit the approbation of our country. It has taken us much time to get acquainted with the tempers, views, characters, and designs of persons, and to let them into the circumstance of our province. My dear, do entreat every friend I have to write me. Every line which comes from our friends is greedily inquired after, and our letters have done us vast service. Middlesex and Suffolk have acquired unbounded honor here. There is no idea of submission here in anybody's head. Thank my dear Nabby for her letter. Tell her it has given me great spirit. Kiss all my sweet ones for me. Adieu. The end. Thank you for listening to Reading the Classics on KRBD, and have a very good 4th of July.